Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. ConocoPhillips wants to sell a 25% stake in an array of its North Slope assets. The Alaska Energy Desk reports that the properties include the Kuparuk and Alpine fields, along with the undeveloped Willow prospect in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. Company spokesperson Natalie Lohman says Conoco's sale reflects investment in a number of big projects on the North Slope.
And it costs a lot of money. So what we're looking for is a company that shares our vision for increasing production on the North Slope.
Conoco owns 100% or close to it of the assets it's looking to sell, and it's not interested in giving up more than a quarter of ownership in any single property. Lohman says the asking price is not going to be made public.
This is a large commercial negotiation, and I think those people who are interested will know how to find us.
It will likely take a deep-pocketed oil company to afford to buy into Conoco's assets and still have enough cash left over to pay for the required investments in the newer projects. Conoco is planning to spend more than $10 billion in Alaska over the next decade. Alaska Native villages are experiencing the brunt of climate change, and a new report for the Denali Commission details the threat. As KYUK's Christy Schallenberger reports for the Alaska Energy Desk, it includes accelerating erosion, winter storm-caused flooding, and thawing permafrost.
10 years ago, the Army Corps of Engineers released a report that detailed the impacts of erosion in Alaska Native communities. Don Antrobus works at the Denali Commission and helped guide an updated report that documents erosion and other environmental threats facing the communities. That's erosion, thawing permafrost, and flooding. Antrobus says all are made worse by climate change.
In order for communities to develop good solutions, they need to fully understand the site-specific threat.
Several reports have documented these environmental threats in Alaska. Back in 2003, the U.S. Government Accountability Office released a report that identified Alaska Native villages under dire threat from erosion. Then in 2009, the Army Corps of Engineers did another report that listed more villages that needed immediate attention because of erosion. A few additional reports focused on thawing permafrost. But this most recent report takes a look at three different threats. Antrobus says more specific information is needed to fully understand them.
One of the approaches that we're taking to try to kind of paint a bullseye around what those additional data collection needs are is to not only say that we need additional information, but to identify these are the specific types of community-specific vulnerability analyses that are necessary.
This report examines 187 communities, most in western Alaska, near or right on the coast or near a river, and ranks them according to how bad the threat is endangering their infrastructure.
You know, there is a little bit of uncertainty based on the availability of data.
Still, the top two names are not a surprise. Shaktulik and Shishmaref, both close to the Bering and Chukchi Seas.
You know, we were looking at flooding, erosion, and permafrost degradation threats to community infrastructure. And so I think it's natural that a lot of the flooding threats, the greatest flooding threats that we're going to see are going to be along the coast.
These villages have endured catastrophic erosion and storm surges, and dwindling sea ice means there's less protection for the shoreline. So the ocean is nibbling closer to communities, forcing some, like Shishmaref, to consider relocation. Other communities sit right next to a riverbank like Napakiak and Nutok in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Nutok is relocating entirely, while Napakiak wants to move its school. Antrobus says the report could help communities figure out their biggest threat. For some, erosion is the biggest, and for others, it's flooding. Antrobus says this report is just a one-time effort, but he hopes government agencies and villages can fill in the gaps in data and apply for funding to do so. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Christy Schellenberger in Bethel.
Two Anchorage brothers have been sentenced to federal prison terms for running illegal drugs to Fairbanks. A release from the U.S. Attorney's Office says 37-year-old Dwayne Dollison Jr. and 35-year-old Kenneth Martin Douglas, who both have prior drug trafficking convictions, were sentenced to 15 years each for drug trafficking conspiracy involving guns. It says the brothers were headed to Fairbanks in September 2017 and stopped for speeding on the Parks Highway outside town by Alaska State Troopers. Troopers also stopped a second vehicle speeding behind the brothers, which was occupied by two women. Their car was a rental, and troopers found cocaine, crack, meth, heroin, and two handguns, one of which was stolen in the trunk. Authorities say investigation found that the brothers orchestrated transport of the drugs and guns in the rental so that if stopped, the women would be prosecuted instead of them, and that Dollison later tried to pay one of the women to say the drugs were hers. Researchers aboard the University of Alaska Fairbanks-run vessel Sikuliak are taking advantage of late-season ice formation in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas. KNOM reports that open water in the Bering Strait is providing favorable sailing conditions for scientists studying the changing fall conditions in Arctic waters. Sikuliak senior oceanographer Jim Thompson refers to the current Chukchi and Beaufort Sea ecosystems as the, quote, new Arctic.
And by the new Arctic, I mean the Arctic with a lot less ice and a really, really late return of the ice. Right, so those are the key things.
According to Thompson, sea ice has been gradually coming back later and later over the last 30 years.
And there's a trend that's about one day per year later. So over the course of three decades, that's about a month. This is something that we published a few years ago when we thought, yeah, the freeze-up's about a month later. Well, things appear to have accelerated a fair bit, and now the freeze-up in some cases this year, it feels like it's going to be almost 2 months later.
Thompson says with delayed sea ice return, open water is present in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas later into the fall when increased storm activity increases wave action.
And so that open water space, we call that the fetch. That's the space over which waves can grow when there's wind. And if there's more fetch, for the same amount of wind, there's more waves.
Wave energy and height are also increasing, and Thompson says if the trend continues, more coastline around the Beaufort and Chukchi could be eroded and infrastructure threatened by storms. Another group of Sikuliak researchers are studying an ecosystem change involving Arctic codfish. Jorge Flores says the study is focused on the fish's migration.
Polar cod is a small fish that is the staple food of the seals, and in this region, especially of the beluga whales. And in that way, really is a cornerstone of the Arctic food web. So without polar cod, everything else doesn't work anymore.
Flores and fellow researcher Franz Mueter suggests that the Arctic cod follow the sea ice as they migrate into the northern Bering Sea. But where the younger fish start from and where they go afterwards is harder to determine.
And that's part of the reason why we, you know, like to see if they maybe associate with the ice as it forms. I mean, they're probably going to drift around the corner into the Beaufort Sea or to the west in the Chukchi Sea. And what we're interested in is if they are deeper in the water column, and if so, do they come up under the ice as the ice forms?
According to Mueter, temperature alone may not be driving Arctic cod farther north in large concentrations. He theorizes that predators may also be pushing them. The Sikuliak will be out at sea until the end of November, and researchers anticipate it will be at least a year before they release study findings. Seattle SeaTac International Airport is reaching capacity, and a public commission has begun a planned 2-year search for a second major airport location. The Northwest News Network's Tom Bonsi reports.
Phenomenal growth at SeaTac Airport is pushing against the capacity limits of the terminal and airfield. That's why Washington state legislators created this new siting commission to get the ball rolling on building a second major airport. It's timely, says Shane Jones. He's vice president for airport development at Seattle-based Alaska Airlines.
There's absolutely a need for additional growth capacity, and in what form that takes in terms of a second airport or even a third airport, I think it's critical that we look at that now, because it does take 10 to 15 to 20 years to do that kind of work.
The new Commercial Aviation Coordination Commission aims to come up with a short list of 6 potential locations by late next year. These might be existing municipal airports that could be upgraded or on open rural land. I'm Tom Bonsi in Olympia.
And I'm Dan Bross.